Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Ideas Sin. My name is Denise, and today I'm excited to bring to you Rogue. Now, Rogue and I met actually through a few different acquaintances, and we're both working on a documentary, which it was going to be a short documentary, but apparently it's a, maybe a little longer. So, I mean, like, for you, what got you roped into that? Like, how did you end up meeting everybody from our team?
Well, I think I met Lisa and Jessica through the Austin School of Film. We took a couple of classes together. I think, I don't remember which one specifically, but they were related to, like, sound and, like, digital filmmaking, you know, some basic classes that I was kind of brushing up on my knowledge. And to fulfill some of the like course requirements or certificate requirements, still haven't gotten my certificate from them, but, but yeah. And then Jessica looped me in. I think she's like, she's bound to be like a future, like producer or something. She's really good at connecting people, but she, looped me in, and then Lisa was spearheading the project, and I was like, oh, well, I know both of them. And then I got introduced to you and Lee, and I was like, oh, this is exciting. I think like, you know, I feel, you know, there's a really special connection, I think, that we all had, like, when we first met. And I think that really drove me to commit to the project. Yeah.
Yeah. Had you ever worked on a documentary before, or is this the first time you're doing something like this?
I think the documentary is a first for me, but I have helped on other student productions for short films. And so it's just, filmmaking is a big interest of mine, so I try to get involved when I can, especially locally. So, yeah.
Yeah. How long have you been interested in filmmaking?
Let's see. I mean, for a while now, but I think I first started actually pursuing the knowledge and taking classes maybe around 2019. So the last 4 or 5 years, maybe, of like, you know, getting books and then attending classes and doing some little projects here and there. But I haven't done anything big yet. We'll see.
Yeah. What got you into filmmaking then?
Well,
like what about it piqued your interest and you were like, oh yeah, I want to actually learn how to make films, not just watch them.
I mean, I think we all start out watching a lot of movies, and then there's always a moment where you start kind of going to the behind the scenes and figuring out, oh, well, how do they make this? And then what does it mean to have this amount of budget? And like, what are the different roles? And it's like, the more I learned it, about the different roles and responsibilities, and like it's a very creative field. There's so many different people you have to collaborate with, so that got me really excited to kind of learn more. And then the technical aspects kind of sometimes it goes over my head, I'll be honest, Denise. but I think it's important to learn, and then like keeping that passion alive. And those are like two key things for me. And like, I know it might take me longer to get to where I want to go, but I think it's important to just, you know, learn a little bit every day.
Mm-hmm. And what was the first class that you took in filmmaking?
I think the first one for me was like aesthetics of filmmaking. And I think they revamped the class after I took it, but it was very cut and dry. It was a lot of theory. And we watched some short clips of different techniques and things like that. But it wasn't very as informative as I thought it would be. I mean, I did learn a lot of like film history in that class and different editing styles. But I don't think it really clicked for me until I like held a camera in my hands and, you know, got to fiddle with some sound equipment and figure out like, oh, what does a set look like, you know, in person? So that was more of when I, like kind of the learning curve wasn't as big, because on smaller productions, it's easier to control some of those elements. So yeah, I'm still learning, but it's a good start to kind of knowing how to produce your own stuff on an indie level, at least. Yeah.
Have you recorded anything prior to doing filmmaking, or were you into photography beforehand? Any visual type of art?
I think I did pick up photography in high school. I was like part of the photography club, and it was led by one of our teachers. And, you know, we just went out into nature and took some photos. And that's how I kind of got started. And I did participate in like yearbook and like writing clubs. So I've always been interested in like artistic pursuits, but I've never really like committed as much time and effort as I have into filmmaking, because I think it's like so vast and then my mind gets bored easily. So I have to like constantly be distracted. So I think it fits my like personality, because like you have to learn about all the different job roles and responsibilities on set, because you have to like kind of be able to jump in where needed, right? Especially if it's just a small crew like ours is, you know, you kind of have to if certain people can't make it, then you have to be able to like think on your feet, right, and be able to fill in for example, Lee does the sound usually, but what if he can't go that day, right? So somebody would have to take over. Mm-hmm. So I think it's good to know a little bit of everything. That way you're not like terrible at everything, but you can kind of at least know a little bit so you can help out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what do you typically gravitate towards now?
I'm more behind the camera. I like writing. Mm-hmm. That is a main driver, and I'm trying to figure out how to get out of writer's block, because I've kind of had a lot of ideas, but I haven't really been able to piece together any cohesive like longer works of art. So I'm trying to get back into it now, and I found a few writing people, like either through work or people I've met, you know, either in Austin or even, well, not here yet, but I'm hoping to meet some fellow artists here in the future to collaborate with. So that keeps me going. Like when you have people to hold you accountable, like us or, you know, some of my other friends, it's nice to kind of have people to drive you as well in pursuits. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. It reminds me of, so have you ever heard of Masterclass?
Oh, I have, yeah.
So they have some folks on there that I believe talk about writing and directing and I think putting together a script. I think I should have a pass. So I can always send you a link to check it out in case you're interested, because some of them are like very well-renowned directors and writers and like all sorts of creative people. So it's like interesting. I'll tap in and I'll be like, oh, what is this creative process like? And what's this like? And what's this like? And mm-hmm. you just get so many random ideas and you're like, oh, wow, I never thought of something like that. And it just, it like applies in so many different areas.
Yeah, I wanted to sign up for a subscription actually during Christmas, but then my friend chickened out because they were doing 2-for-1 accounts or something during the holidays. And I was like, well, okay, fine. Then I'll wait until next year. And I'll just do it anyway. But no, I will hit you up later to try it out. And then if I like it, I'll sign up too.
Yeah. I'll send you the link so you can check it out, because okay, I think it's good for... I don't know, maybe like 30 days or listening to a few classes or something. So yeah.
Okay.
That'll give you a good feeler for it.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. No, I love hearing, you know, from, you know, like world renowned, or, you know, just they're really top of their field, artists, you know, directors or writers, producers, like, it's all part of the process, and you need to be able to work with people like that if you want to succeed, right, in whatever you're trying to do. And maybe, like, you know, they're definitely several or multiple levels above you, but, you know, you can still learn from them. So I love that as a resource. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in your current, I guess, profession, like, do you get to apply any of the learnings that you've gotten from filmmaking in that, or is it like totally different?
I think like the content is very different. but it's similar in terms of like, it's, well, it's basically very corporate and very business heavy, but we make a lot of PowerPoint presentations. And so I think like the creative aspect, like the visual design of that kind of comes into play a lot more. I mean, the client is a little more conservative, but we do have a lot of room to kind of express ourselves in our own style, like in terms of what we're writing, and then like designing the PowerPoints. There's certain guidelines, but you kind of have some room to kind of do your own thing too.
Have you been working in your industry for a long time?
Well, I got hired as a consultant because I have like 7-8 years of contact center or call center management experience, including being a service representative, customer service representative. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how I got into that kind of job. In the beginning, it was to survive. And now I'm more like, oh, well, I'm doing it as a profession, like as a professional level. And so there's a lot of things to learn. And it's exciting, though, to kind of challenge yourself, you know, that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I keep finding that regardless of what you're doing in your job, you're picking up skills. This was an interesting thought. And a conversation I had with a friend just yesterday is, it would be interesting if some of us are getting pulled into roles in order to strengthen some of the characteristics that we're typically not strong in. And so like, once you do that, you end up gravitating towards the things that you are good at, but now you've kind of like up-leveled some of those other lower strengths, and then you've bumped them up. So now it's like, oh, okay, now you have like your full strengths to really tap into, and then you have your other skills that are now going to apply and complement what you need to get done. So that'll be kind of cool to see where it goes.
I definitely think the skills I'm learning now and for the last like, you know, the career I had before I became a consultant will definitely come into play in terms of what I want to do with filmmaking and writing. Yeah, I can see them correlating or, you know, one influencing the other even. Mm. So, I mean, it's kind of weird in how it works, but I could totally see like where your friend kind of came up with that though. Like, I think it does apply, you know, in real life and in like our imaginations, right? Which is what we're trying to pursue outside of work. So I can definitely see like the connections there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, what if, I just thought of this, but like you're constantly doing PowerPoints for clients and for other people. When you're putting together a PowerPoint, you're really like providing a visual representation of like a story. Like you're providing a story visually in that sense. So I'm wondering if maybe to help with your writing process, instead of going in and literally writing, what if you were to start with like a visual process first, and then like this way you can get like the overall picture of what you want and then break it down into writing. Do you think that could work?
I think so. And that's why like we do storyboarding at work, and that helps. That's actually a process we do for filmmaking too, except it's different. It's different content and styles, I guess, because at work we're doing it more for, yeah, like you said, the client or, you know, different key stakeholders, as we say in the business world.
Yeah.
But I could see it applying in filmmaking too, because there is a process after you get the script, right? Like, and then you have to hire everybody, but then there's a storyboarding process too. So maybe you can start with that and then, you know, sketch out like what should be happening, like what story and characters that you're thinking about. So that could be cool to explore. Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah, I can. I mean, I haven't written anything, but I could totally see you just doing like a storyboard, even for like just certain aspects of your script, like, or a character, or you're like, yeah, there's just like this one scene that I can envision. And maybe you can just create a storyboard off that and then see how it goes from there.
There is a writer and who now is kind of like a consultant too. She, her name is Jill Chamberlain, and she has classes in Austin on screenwriting. And she has this book called The Nutshell Technique. And I took her class actually a few years ago. And I did learn how to like kind of map out, like you were saying, like the main character and their story arc and what, how like the different plot points should fit into a story. And so that method really like, because I'm a visual learner. So I think it really helped me to start drafting my stories. And then the next step of the process she usually advises writers to do is to write like an outline or a beat sheet. And then that really helps because then you can go into it and write like your treatment, like your 10, 15 page short story version before you dive into like the other aspects of writing, the actual script. So it's like different layers of writing that kind of culminate into your main work, which I find very interesting. And I know a lot of other writers will do like, for example, in the industry, there's like what's called a Bible or like a show Bible. I don't know if you've heard of that term or not, but it's basically where they, for example, if it's like a TV series, right? They'll have like, now shows are much shorter, so they'll probably do like 8 or 10 episodes, right? And so they'll have an outline and a map of all the characters, all the stories of every episode. And then they'll even have like color swatches of what colors, like the clothes should be, and then the colors of like what the set design is, and then like there's what the actual set design is. So there's like all the aspects of production in like one place, which I find very fascinating because it's like you don't realize that there's so much documentation that gets into that goes into making like one like movie or TV show. And it's not just what you see and hear, but it's the planning and like the deciding behind the scenes of it all. And it's like really interesting to me, you know, and that's why I do gravitate towards like directing or producing too, because I think those are, I mean, obviously not everyone can be the director, right? Or the producer, but the roles are very interesting because you can connect people and resources together to make really cool artistic things, you know, that came out of someone's brain, right? So it's like, it's really exciting to kind of be part of that process and kind of see where your mind goes to and what kind of stories and plots, I mean, characters, things like that. Because you don't really get to do that in your normal life, right? So, yeah, and that's why I like it.
So what kind of writing are you into? Do you have a specific type of genre that you tend to gravitate towards, or is it just free-flowing?
You know, when I first started writing when I was younger, maybe like middle school or high school, it was much more free-flowing, like stream of consciousness style. But now I think I gravitate more towards, it's more genre specific for sure. So like science fiction, I'm trying to get into that. I watch a lot of science fiction. I don't read a lot of it. I guess comics count a little bit, but it's not like, the novels or short stories that usually get published. So I haven't done as much of that, but I'd like to. I'm challenging myself to read some of the classic works, like from Isaac Asimov and what was his name? There's some great writers that I read when I was younger. And don't you think it's weird? Like you read a lot when you're younger, but when as an adult, like we don't really get into it as much. But anyway, yeah, I think there's a lot of great content there, and it's figuring out what you want to do. Right now, I'm working on a project that's historical fiction. And yeah, I've got some books here that I've been trying to read. This one is Ghosts of Gold Mountain. And it talks about the Chinese railroad workers on the Transcontinental Road.
Oh,
really? There's got a few other books like that too. Yeah, like this one is a novel. This one is more of a historical account, the one I just showed you. But this one's more of a novel, like a YA kind of novel. Dragon's Gate. It's like a series, I think, of
Dragon's Gate books.
Yep. Yeah, there's like a series, the Golden Mountain Chronicles, And so, like, there's all kinds of material that I never knew existed, you know? But, like, moving to Sacramento, I'm, like, discovering, like, because this was, you know, the starting point of the Pacific, the Union Pacific route, right, from here. And they met, like, the eastern side in the middle, right? So I kind of find that to be really fascinating, even though there's obviously issues that stem from then that you can't kind of have to be careful with when you're researching and writing about that time period. But I think there's room to, like, kind of combine genres even. Like, maybe I could combine science fiction with historical fiction. Like, what if somebody time traveled to back then and got stuck there and had to, like, live their lives then?
I'm sure it's happened.
Right?
A lot of people are stuck in the past, so, like, why not?
It could be interesting. I mean, it's a very familiar trope, so it would get viewers invested or readers invested right away because they're familiar with the kind of concept. But, like, you could develop your own rules, right, of the world that you're developing. And that's kind of fun to do versus just doing not necessarily, like, a dry historical fiction, like, drama or something like that. Like, I really like The Gilded Age. I think that Julian Fellowes is really brilliant. He also did, what was it called? Downton Abbey. And so it's a very specific style to do that, like, historical or period drama. But I think I have a wild imagination, and so I think I would, like, combine it with some crazy, like, time travel tale or some other, like, science fiction concept.
Yeah, I think that would be really cool.
I think so too. And then, like, it's like, well, okay, I know that happened on Earth, but, like, what if that happened on a totally completely different planet? But you have similar types of stories, you know, like, I don't know. I'm still playing around with, like, what I want to do with it. Because there's, like, so many different versions you could tell with so many different types of characters too. Like, it's so interesting, you know?
That's making me think of, like, multi-dimension. And it's like, what if you, like, you go back in time, but, like, you're in a completely different dimension. And so it's not like you're going to, I don't know, experience the same type of potential life because you're now completely flipped, but you're in a past. Yeah, I don't know. Just something. I'm leaving it for you to write. I'm just spitballing.
Yeah. No, I like it. I mean, it kind of makes me think of video games, right? Because you have to pick, like, a lot of video games are written for, like, males, right? And so you have to figure out, like, I mean, no, there's a lot for us too. But traditionally, and then you have to, like, you know, pick some name for the character, and then it's like, well, for example, BioShock, the main character is a man, right? And so I'm just like, oh, well, I guess I get to be a man in this game.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Awesome.
Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah, I didn't get much into it because, like, the one I'm playing, it starts at a lighthouse, and I'm just like, okay, this is really creepy, and there's, like, a murder that happens there, and I'm like, okay, I need to stop. It's like mob era 1940s New York, and I'm just like, okay, maybe I need to like, and then it changes though. It's so interesting. Like, video games are really interesting, Denise. I think they inspire me too, because it's like you're role playing a lot of the time, and it's like you get to live a life that you would never get to experience in real life, but it's all virtual, right? It's like digital entertainment, and then there's so much room for, like, storytelling there too. Yeah, it's not just movies that inspire me. There's so many different types of media that you can tell stories in these days. Mm. So, yeah, it's kind of exciting.
Yeah, maybe that would be a cool little avenue to explore, is, like, video game story writing, storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that could be potentially be my next job, Denise.
Do it. I'll connect you with my brother, who's also really into video games as well. And like he's during our podcast session, he was like, he's going in and already thinking about the paperwork required to like, you know, put stuff together. Oh, yeah. So the fact that you talked about that too, earlier. It's like, you guys will connect fine. You'll be like, it's what like, kind of paperwork do we need? All this. You guys have fun. I'm checking out.
I feel like there's a lot of like details that like you don't think about, and it's all paperwork, but before you can have fun and do the actual thing you want to do. You know what I mean? And I'm discovering this more and more as I like progress in my life, like as I get more and more like into different things. It's like, oh well, you know, I probably should found my own company if I want to make it into filmmaking. Then I can get insurance that covers the company, not like I won't be because you know, personally liable. I've been like discovering the business aspects of the trade, and I'm just like, oh yeah, I mean, I knew this before, but I guess it's really important, especially if I want to be filming like car scenes, or if I want to be doing specific stunts or whatever, right? It's like, well, if the actors get hurt and sue me, that would suck.
That would suck.
Right. Or if anybody else does, right? So it's like, oh, that makes so much more sense. But it's like costly too to found your own business and keep it up and running. So it's like, yeah, you have to pick your moment really to do that.
Well, I took like a media policy course and they talked just about that. You know, if you're filming outside, what are you able to film? Well, so long as it's in the public, technically you can record people who's driving in a car next to you. You know, and so people that are out there listening to this, it's like, if you are in a public setting, technically like you can be recorded. Like there's nothing stopping anybody from doing that. But obviously, like, it's totally different if you're in your home and somebody's, like, creeping in. And even that's, like, weird, too. They were like, yeah, you know, technically, you know, if you have your windows completely wide open and somebody's across the street or on public, like, on public soil and they can see whatever's happening, like, technically, I don't know if they said, like, you can technically record or, like, look in.
How
but it's like it's that's very weird. Yeah, it's really weird. I think that's why, you know, there's so many issues with like celebrity cases where it's like, oh yeah, you know, you have those photographers that are constantly stalking these celebrities and taking pictures of them at hotels and all this stuff. It's like, yeah, it's that's really a very simple. Fine line.
I can't.
Yeah, I couldn't do that. I like my privacy.
I mean, I think like if we do become big names in the entertainment industry, I mean, you know, you never know, right? There's ways to deal with it. Like your PR team would probably tell you what to do and how to handle that kind of pressure.
Yeah.
And then you'd be able to afford mental health. So, you know.
Oh my gosh. Every day is a mental health session. All right.
I know. I mean, like. Yeah, I think even as an everyday person, like a private citizen, I need mental health help because it's just like, well, you know, it's not just stress at work, but it's like, you know, adapting to a new city and then missing my friends and family, like everyone's in different places. And then it's just like so much shit is happening in the world. Like, not to talk about depressing stuff, but it's like crazy, crazy what things, you know, happen every year, and you're just like, I don't know if I'm prepared for this to happen, like, you know. Yeah, but you just have to, you know, embrace things that keep you happy, which is like, you know, making art and having sessions like this and being able to talk about happy things, you know, really help. Yeah
and it's true, and like, don't feel the need to apologize, because that's something that everybody goes through, are those anxious and depressive states and being lost in life or in the world. And I'm not saying everybody's lost. I'm not like directing that at you. I'm just saying in general, like we all experience it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it is just that we need to just accept that It's very common. I feel like I keep talking about this a lot in different podcasts recordings that I've had, but it's just we still don't have like a really good sense of community amongst us. And so there's a disconnect. And so a lot of people feel isolated and they feel like, oh, my emotions are either not valid. They can't share it. They feel like they're the only ones maybe experiencing certain types of fears and anxieties. And I can't talk about this and I can't do this and I can't show weakness. And it's like, everybody is going through something. And it's just like, you know, we're not alone. Like, it's conversations like this that really help us to be like, oh, you're going through that too? Me too. Like, let's connect. And
I think there's a lot of people who do and who feel that way. Like, they can't show that side of themselves. Whereas I talk about it all day. And I feel like, like, sometimes maybe I'm talking about it too much. But, but I mean, I think it's like valid. Like, everyone has a valid point of view and experience, right? And I think it's just being able to be there for people when they're at lower points than you are is important too, to be a good supporter of someone else who's going through something rough, right? Or, you know, you may be going through stuff too, but, you know, if you can be there, then obviously that would be ideal, right? That's one way we can build up that kind of community, and like, being there for each other is really important.
And I appreciate that you said can be there, because I know sometimes we get caught up in the, I need to be there for them. I have to be there for them. But, you know, you're filling you don't have that energy to necessarily give to another person. And if you are going through your own things and you can't even sort through your stuff, like, how can you do that to somebody else? Like, you're giving out of an empty cup. Right. And yeah, I think that's important too. It's like, we have to take care of ourselves. And then when we have the energy, it's like, we share it with other people.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it's kind of hard, right? If you're also down the dumps and you're just like, oh, I don't know if I can listen to this person talk about their problems today. And like, you know, you're not a licensed therapist, right? So so it's like, even though you have like maybe some knowledge of psychology or whatever, I mean, everyone does these days. I mean, it's not, sometimes you just, like you said, you're giving out of an empty cup, like, you don't have the spoons for it, right? So, but it's not, I don't think it's really about that. I think at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, like what I said, like, when you can, you know, try and be there. But if not, then, you know, maybe you do need the space before you can be that type of like conduit or supporter for someone else. Yeah, definitely take. I'm learning this. It's like, I think I kind of disregarded a lot of like wellness or mental health kind of stuff, like, when I was younger. But now, like, I think, I mean, not that I'm like old or whatever, but
no, you're not old.
I feel like age though, like age of like year over year. Sorry that we're talking about aging now, but it's like,
it's okay. That's important too.
Relearning lessons that you learned, you know, it's like relearning things in more detail, I feel, as we like go. So I think it's okay. And everyone learns at different paces. So I think, yeah, and I think this applies to the art stuff too, like the filmmaking and writing and, you know, different things we talked about on the podcast of doing that requires a lot of mental agility, right? You have to be very adaptable. You have to be able to think in a way that you don't in your day job. And so, and then having a day job plus wanting to pursue this, it makes you kind of crazy inside, right? And so you kind of have to, you kind of have to do like two jobs or five jobs. I don't know how many jobs at the same time to kind of do what you want to do. And so it can be very, you can feel all the emotions in one day sometimes when you're really trying to like do everything you want in your life. And then you realize, oh, maybe I can't today. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I actually really appreciate that you say that, because I feel like I never look at some of these things or podcasts as like a job. I just see it as like, oh yeah, it's just like a thing that I want to do. But there's a lot that goes into these different things. And it's true. It's like some of these things literally are like a job, because you have to go learn about producing and audio processing and figuring out the different systems that go into it, scheduling people, creating email. I'm not going to go into my whole process, but like these are all the different things that I had to figure out on my own and like take, you know, whatever I've learned from like the previous classes or from talking to different people or, you know, watching YouTube videos and like there's a lot, and that applies to any type of activity that you're into. Like you have to really start diving in and swimming. But if you are at like an emotional or like mental capacity for the day, you're just like, oh, I gotta give myself a break. I think that's the other thing, is being forgiving of like, hey, you've hit your energy capacity for today. It's okay to rest. Deal with it another day.
Yeah.
Or the next day, you know.
Or the week later.
Sometimes, yeah.
Just continue procrastinating like I have. No, I'm kidding.
Depends how long.
I think my problem is I have squirrel brain. And so, and I don't remember things very, very quickly, or no, that's not the right way to say, but I'm just like, I have so many interests and I get a lot of ideas. And so sometimes you can't slow down to kind of process and flesh out what you want to do. And then you're just like, well, okay, I'll write all the ideas down first and then come back to it later.
No, and that's a good strategy, and just figure out like, okay, what am I being called to? Like, so I understand where you're coming from. I also have a ton of different interests, and I'm always gravitating towards what is drawing my attention at that time. And I feel like there are moments where it's like, I saw this really good YouTube video, and it was something like, it was actually like a really interesting video and really well put together. I'll have to find it and I'll add it in the bio, but I'll share it. But the girl pretty much goes and says, you know, like, you're not lazy because you can't like stick to a routine schedule and do things the way that we have been taught or forced to learn while we were in school. Some people are the kind of individuals who, yeah, you can expose them to the idea and this and that, but like they're able to really hyper focus when it's necessary, and then they can execute and they learn even faster than some of the other people that, you know, are constantly just putting in like little bits of time every single day to something like that. I thought it was really interesting because I like really felt, I felt comfort in that, because I do work in those ways. It's like, I have all these different interests and I'll expose myself to little things here and there and kind of get that information plugging into my brain, like very passively. And then out of nowhere, I'll get that energy surge where I'm like, okay, now I'm going to dive in. And then I'm like, and I'm like hyper-focused, like executing, researching, and doing everything that I need to do because I have the energy and the span for it. So I just feel like there are a number of people that are like that, and we just have knowledge for that.
And I think an important thing is to like make space for yourself too, like we were talking before. And it's very important to, to work based off of your strengths, and then you can improve your weaknesses later.
Well, the other aspect too, somebody else that I've been talking to has mentioned, and kind of like coaching is just, you know, sometimes we just need to focus on our strengths and optimize that. And, you know, if we have weaknesses in other areas, sometimes we just have to find somebody who can help fulfill those things, because maybe those are the strengths that they're good at. And it's like, so for example, with the paperwork, if I'm like, guys, I have a million pages of things and I don't know what to do with this, I'm going to just go to you and my brother who are all about paperwork. And then you, y'all can handle it, because that's like, it seems like that's up your wheelhouse, you know.
I could probably figure it out,
So see, it's like, you know, sometimes you just got to find that balance and be like, it's okay to offset sometimes to like other people who are into thing, and then help each other out, I guess, in that way.
And that's why I like going back to like filmmaking and how we met, like I think full circle, it's like, yeah, we all have our different strengths and weaknesses. And I think that's why we work really well as a crew and a team together. Everyone has such, you know, interesting ideas too, to bring to the project. So it's not like one person who's driving, even though it is technically Lisa's project since she knows the band and put everything together for us. But I think everybody's really strong in different areas. So I think everyone has something to bring to the table. And I think that's part of why I like filmmaking, is like you can meet so many diverse people from different backgrounds who have different skill sets that can combine together, you know? So it's not just you doing everything, but, you know, if you know different people who can help you, why not leverage that, right? Because they're a resource and they can pass knowledge on to you so you can do what you want to do even better down the line, right? So I think that's definitely very valid. I agree.
Yeah. And so, I guess, I mean, we're almost done filming. And so it'll be interesting because now we're going to get into the editing aspect of it. Like, have you had a lot of editing experience before?
I think I've taken a lot of classes, but I don't think I have a lot of like real experience yet with it. But I'm fascinated by like different editing strategies and like the functions of the different software. So I just like kind of like nerd out in terms of computer programs, because that's what we do at work. Mm-hmm. We have to know the advanced functions in like the core Microsoft products. So like, you know, Excel, Word, PowerPoint and stuff like that. And I'm just like, oh, I can't keep up sometimes. but I mean, you know, you kind of have to like click around and just know what all the buttons do. So yeah, I think that's part of it, is kind of, it's an adventure, right? Like every new platform or software you use is a chance to kind of grow those skills, you know, because a lot of times, for example, in video editing, I cannot say that word today. I don't know why. Anyway,
that's okay. There's a lot of words I can't say. Stumble over. I'm like,
right. I know. I just like certain days you can't say certain words. And it's just like, do I have dyslexia? I don't know. I have other things I know I have, but you know, maybe there's some comorbidity. Who knows? but anyway, in video editing, there's sound editing combined with most video editing platforms, yeah. Or, you know, like, the big ones are on Apple. They have, what is it called? Final Cut Pro, right? And then with Adobe, you have, I don't remember what it's called, but there's a few different softwares that people will use.
There's
like
video?
DaVinci too. Yeah. Have you heard of them?
Oh, I should. There's like Adobe After Effects, Media, Premiere Pro.
Oh, yeah, After Effects. Yes. That one's that one's a good one. Premiere Pro is good too. But yeah, there's some other ones too. But it's just like you find that there are similar functions within those different applications, that if a certain project is using a different one than you're used to, it's okay to not be comfortable with it and to jump in and learn a new program, because you can use it later on. You can apply that same knowledge you learn to different platforms. There's a lot of similar functions. Excuse me. But yeah, I find, you know, I think I know what buttons to push to do very basic or intermediate level stuff, but I definitely want to dive in more and learn all of it. I mean, it's impossible to learn everything, obviously, but as much as I can, whenever I can upgrade my laptop, I plan on installing the Adobe Creative Suite and some other programs like Final Draft for screenwriting and stuff. I mean, it's going to be expensive, but I'm saving up to kind of get a good setup so I can, you know, utilize, because the desk I'm at right now is in my room and I plan on using this as a creative space. Because the one outside is like for work and stuff. So I'm just like, okay, I need a safe space to like just breathe and sit down and like, you know, oh, I'm going to like write today. So I should have, you know, the right software and stuff. So, I mean, that's a ideal dream scenario. Right now I'm just using, some free products to like kind of create, but you know, you make do with what you can. But yeah, I definitely would be interested in editing and stuff. Sorry, that's a long long-winded answer.
No, that's totally okay. That's like the whole point. It's for you to talk.
I can be very wordy, as somebody mentioned earlier to me yesterday at work.
Oh, really?
that's just because I have like all of these thoughts in my head, and it's very flowery usually, and I can like, I don't know, I just have very sometimes run-on sentences in my head, and you know when like after you write it down, you're just like, this doesn't sound right, and then that's where the editing comes in too with writing. Like, yeah, I think a lot of things we do is like, we put it down, like, or get it out there, and then the creative process is more of editing it and like, what do we want it to look like in the end, the final result. And so I can talk about editing all day. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. Don't apologize.
That's another problem I have. I think I apologize too much, and I think it's very Asian, because, well, not just Asian, but I think as female, like born, like we kind of get taught to apologize for a lot of things, right? And so I think that's a cultural thing too that we're shifting away from gradually, but I think it's still part of my behavior, you know. But I think it's okay to know where. I think it's knowing when to apologize is hard sometimes.
That is a thing for women especially, because a lot of the times we're, yeah, again, depending on the culture that you're in, sometimes it's like, don't talk unless you're spoken to, or, you know, like, don't talk too much.
There's that. I think that's playing more into our culture right now is, you talk, but only to a certain extent. Like, you still can't talk about certain topics sometimes, right?
Yeah, there was an
and
interesting.
So it can be hard.
Yeah, and there's like an interesting study that was done comparing how women speak up, like in meetings, versus men, and typically how men dominate the conversation at a table, and the women, unfortunately, they don't always get to like chip in. And so it's like, it's great that we're at a table to talk, but there should be space for other people to talk as well. And so I think that. You know, we have to step into more self-awareness and be like, am I always talking? Like, if you're always the one talking at the table, you know, maybe that's something to like realize in a business setting anyway. Like, I realize that. It's just like, okay, yeah, like, yeah, you know, this person, like, Bob, let Nancy speak, okay? She literally said one sentence before you interrupted her, or you interjected and then just regurgitated what she said in a different way. So it's like, I've seen that before, and it's just like, dude, like, why are you just changing her idea and trying to take credit for it? It's, I don't know. I've seen it, and I don't like it, but again,
I think all of us have, you know, at work, and it's kind of hard to, I mean, maybe it's even happened to you before, right? And so, I mean, I'm not assuming for you, but like for me, I think I've experienced it once or twice. And then it makes you uncomfortable, right? And it's just like, well, okay, whatever. But you don't really know what to do. And that's when you should be talking to, you know, maybe your supervisor or somebody on the side after it happens. But then it's like, yeah, I think we're taught not to stand up for ourselves. You know, we're like, oh, somebody should come to your rescue. But it's like, okay, we're over that phase now, but it's like, well, what do we do when those situations happen? I think that's not very well understood. Like, certain people can do it very well though, like women or other people who can be more assertive at work, but then I think it's hard because, like, culturally, for like me at least, in like Chinese or Asian culture especially, like there is a hierarchy in a lot of ways. And like, oh, you're not supposed to like speak when there's more elders present, you know, unless you get asked for your opinion, right? Or, you know, constantly being told like, oh, you're interrupting, you should like just listen. And oh, so really? Sometimes it can be hard to speak up. I mean, that's like a very general stereotype, but I mean, it is kind of cultural, I think, in some ways. Especially like when I was younger, my mom would always, you know, tell me not to interrupt and like you know, let the adults talk about, you know, what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. But now I think it's more lax now for sure in modern times, but it's hard to get out of the mindset, I guess, sometimes.
Yeah, because it's,
but
it's
programmed
in, you know?
Right. And it's like the deprogramming aspect of like figuring out, oh, you know, I should speak up, you know, when I have an idea or if I have feedback to give, right? That's just going to help, you know, your colleagues or your friends even. So it's just kind of managing that and knowing when to do certain things. I think that there's a theme in my life is like figuring out when to do certain things or say certain things mm-hmm. is what I'm learning more recently. Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like a lot of us will be going through different phases like that. Like I definitely have been through those phases as well, where it's like, oh, am I speaking too much? Or I know sometimes I get into very abstract talk as well. And actually mm-hmm. going back to your point, how sometimes you noted sometimes like that you'll talk and it can sometimes be like just very long or abstract mm-hmm. kind of thinking or thoughts and things like that. And it made me wonder if you've ever gotten into any kind of like creative writing, because then doing that and it could just be like little short poems or little just like short whatever, but like you write it in mm-hmm. whatever artistic way like comes to you. That's what I've been trying mm-hmm. to do more on my end. And I find that, yeah, I tell this story, but then it's, I don't know, it kind of balances that abstract thinking or form of communication that I have. And it helps to clear my mind a little bit so that when I am mm-hmm. listening and responding, I can come back with something more direct or more precise. Cause I have that tendency too. Like I'll write out this long ass email and I was like, man, I can just eliminate all of this. And then this is the main yeah. point, you know, one line is the main point. And yet I wrote a paragraph to explain it. It's like, yeah, the communication process is mm-hmm. it's a thing. It's a thing that a lot of us have to learn or relearn or figure mm-hmm. out our own like form of communication. What's the best way we communicate and how can we optimize that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely agree. And seeing that kind of play out currently in my life. And I think it's just like something you don't actively think about a lot. Until you have to, which isn't anything bad. It's just, you know, you're learning different skills at different points in your life. And I think, or strengthening ones that you thought were good already. And then, you know, there's always room to like kind of improve. Right. So that's what's good about like, you know, being very curious. I think curiosity is important as well as part of the creative process, even, you know, you have to have that curiosity to drive your passion sometimes, because certain topics like what I'm doing with my current project, like the Transcontinental Railroad, like the history books are very dry about that stuff. So it's like finding the room where you can insert that creativity, right? And the storytelling, like, you know, it's like, that's part of the creative process, is not only understanding that time period and doing some research first before you dive in, because you have to like kind of know what you're talking about in order to like write from that time period, right? But then like what we were saying before, like you could play around with different genres, different ideas to kind of do a mashup or a combination of your interests, right? So I think it's all connected. Like all the things we talked about today, they're all kind of related in some way, shape or form, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, everything always comes full circle in some type of way. You know, I'm hearing that and I'm thinking of my friend who I spoke to yesterday, and she's talking about her creative process and how she, mm-hmm. she's writing. She wants to get into directing and script writing as well. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. You know, like there's so many people that are trying to go through a very similar process and have their own ways of approaching that activity. And it's just kind of cool to hear like where everybody is either sometimes even stuck in a process. Like that for me is still kind of interesting, because you're like, oh, wait, that's like a blocker for people. So like, what's an alternative way? What's a potential solution or creative solution that we can come up with to help remove that block? Because if it's a common mm-hmm. issue with most people, then that's something maybe we can focus on. And I think you touched on that earlier, is like your imagination and just kind of exploring that a bit more.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we give our imaginations enough credit. I mean, famously, like the Japanese animator Hayao Miyazaki, like he just came out with his last film, but he created Studio Ghibli. I don't know if you know those.
Oh,
films.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, and he the Boy and the Heron is his latest one. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but his imagination, I feel like, yeah, he must have been on something because it's wild. You gotta go watch it.
Oh, really? Is it on Netflix?
Definitely. Well, no, it was in theaters first, but I don't think it's come out yet on streaming. I'll let you know though, because I've been tracking that. I want to watch it again. But it's like his world building is so unique, you know, and only he can do that, I think. And it's very abstract and Dadaist to an extent. I love that kind of stuff. Dadaist. Have you heard of the Dada movement, where it's like, it kind of happened post-war, and there was like all of these artists who were just like doing, or have you heard of the phrase art for art's sake?
Oh,
like just doing the art and making it because that's what, you know, you should be doing, like, or not should be doing, but it's like, if you get an idea and you want to create art for it, then you should do it, because at the end of the day, the art is more important than what message you're trying to send. Or maybe there isn't a message in there, but it's all like part of it, right? And so it's they kind of like delved into very abstract concepts and how to like put that kind of out there. I think you would like that, like movies by Studio Ghibli. Have you seen any?
No. It's funny that I've even gotten into film, because it's like, I like watching certain movies like fantasy, sci-fi stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
like, I don't have a TV. I don't like watch a lot of stuff anymore. And if I'm on Netflix, it's always, you know, I'm always watching like some educational shit and just, let me learn how to advance my skills and dive into this and that. So it's, so unfortunately I haven't really given myself the time or the luxury to just kind of indulge in a lot of these
shows.
We're
going to have a movie night.
Yeah.
We're going to have a movie night and we're going to watch cartoons.
Yeah.
But really good quality ones.
Yeah. I'm totally down. I was just thinking of watching Avatar, The Last Airbender again, because I really like it. I thought it was cute.
That's a good series. I was just talking about Korra the other day with a coworker.
I love Korra too. Like,
that's a good one. I never finished it. I got to go back and watch it again. Yeah.
Yeah. That one took longer for me to finish. Even though I said I love it, I liked it. It was just very hard for me to like align with the, I don't know, with the theme of it.
I think the pacing was kind of off too in certain seasons, right? Like, I don't know if you could feel that, but there was something off between season one and two. And then I think I stopped at like the beginning of season three. Like between two and three, two were a little different. Like, yeah, thematically, I could kind of tell where they were going, but then plot wise, and then like the pacing of the stories, like each episode was kind of like, did they switch writers in between or creative directors or whatever? Like, something feels off. I don't know.
It was like, it's like I want to connect, but there was something off about it. And I was just
But like with the first series, like Avatar, the first Airbender, like the Aang and everything like that, that was very easy to kind of connect with, because I think it was like one creative team kind of saw through the whole series, right?
Mm.
So sometimes you can tell like different installments of different genres or art that you're following can change. And it's like, that's a fascinating aspect too, that you don't think about, like the end results can be different depending on who's making it. So it's like, even if you have an idea that's been done before, the way you execute it or tell it will be different and will be unique to you. And so you never know what's going to like hit, right? So like you need to still do it. Otherwise it's kind of like a moot point, right? Like, so that's what I'm discovering too, is like, okay, I need to get over my writer's block and I need to like let the creative juices flow so I can get there and like, you know, do the crazy stuff I want to do, because not crazy, but it's like, you know, some ideas are pretty out there sometimes, but it's like, oh, I should probably just make it happen, you know, like build it and they will come kind of concept. Like I've been told that, like, yeah, your ideas are good, but you just need to execute them, you know, and then in a unique way that kind of tells your story, but through the lens of obviously different characters and stories. And I think that's so fascinating to me, that it's like, there is an interest out there of, and there's a hunger, I think, for certain independent types of projects that I think like is a very unique in time, I think, to kind of jump in, even though I may have missed like the first wave of like maybe Asian artists who kind of have been driving a lot of the opportunities these days. But I think there's still a lot of room to kind of be included for everyone who wants to pursue like a artistic career. I think there's room for all types of voices, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially in the creative industry. I think that too.
Yeah.
And actually Lee recommended The Artist's Way. And that is like,
oh my gosh. My brother did too.
Oh, so really? Recently to you?
He's been talking about it the last couple of months. So yeah, fairly recently.
It's a sign. You need to get on it.
It to you. Have you started?
Not yet. Cause I've been trying to finish like a few other books. I'm the kind of person I jump into a lot of books. So I got one down.
Me too.
I'm finishing one more. And then before I jump into that, then, you know, I just want to.
Okay, let me know.
Clear that.
Because I'm thinking maybe we can do it together. We can be accountability partners.
Oh,
and
love
actually get
that.
Something done artistically.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
Well, for me too. Like there's always something that I need to like finish. And there's always creative projects. So I think that would be really nice too. I think it says to like get off of social media or media for like a week or something to kind of clear everything out. So I think that would be really interesting too. And almost like a challenge, especially when our projects are specifically on media. So it's almost like, how do you take a break from that if we have to do a podcast session or we have to edit videos? So that should be interesting actually. Huh. All right. Well, we'll figure
I'd
it out.
I'd love to read that section and see like, what the rules are, like what do they prescribe to do, you know? I think that would be really interesting to go through.
Yeah. I think that'll be fun.
Speaking of like process, it'll be really interesting to see if our current artistic processes change going through the artist's way. I think it'll be very interesting. Ooh. Yeah.
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 Huh.
Okay, let me know so I can go borrow it from the library.
No, but that's
I'm trying
great.
To do like, trying to do a no books buying thing for this year. But so far I failed because I bought these books and some other ones. But I'm trying to go digital too. So we'll see. I do like having a physical book though. There's something about it that's very, it's a certain experience that's different from like an e-reader, right? Like Kindle or reading something online. I don't know. It's, they're all good, but I think it's different on the eyes. Just from my
definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. Because like there's one thing with seeing a screen and not necessarily touching it or just holding on to one thing that's like flat. There's nothing that ever changes. Like, yeah, it definitely affects us. And there is more of an experience when it comes to a book. Like there's just the physical sensation of holding it, of like moving it around.
And the pages. And, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree. Like, books, but yeah, definitely going to the library. I always forget like, oh, that's an option. And the library, they also do, at least the one here in Austin, they do like video rentals. They do the book rentals, audio rentals. So anybody who wants to get into that, they can easily like look up free materials for whatever they want and then use that and start buying stuff.
Exactly. And then it's like buying books. It's like, well, where am I going to put it all, you know, eventually? So it's just like, now I'm like, okay, I need to get back into physical reading because I have so many books. I'm not even lying, Denise. I have like 400 books.
Oh my gosh. Wait, what if you donated to your library? They might
That's
accept
what I'm thinking
that.
Is like, I'll probably read some and then see if I can donate some or sell them secondhand to the local thrift stores or secondhand bookstores. And sometimes I'll give you credit or like, you know, towards other books, you know. So yeah, I'll have to check that out once I get a collection going so I can haul like, you know, not just one, but like, you know, maybe like five to 10 books at one time and go to the store or go to the library to like, oh, do you guys take these?
Yeah.
I have to figure it out before I go though, because I've often, what I've done, Denise, in the past, I've shown up to a place, I didn't look it up online before, and I'm just like, oh, they don't accept this here. Like,
oh,
or
really?
they don't, you know, do certain things. So I'm just like, oh crap. Well, I'm here already, so let me buy another book.
Oh my gosh.
It's a problem. It's a real problem.
I feel the same way. I'll go in and I'm like, oh, I'm just going to gravitate towards this section. Then I spend hours just reading things. And then I'm like, oh, but I want to read about this and I want to read about that. And eventually I'm going to get to that. And obviously I'm going to read this at some point. So I feel that.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's just kind of like managing it and figuring out how to manage your media. I think that's another session we could have. Ooh. Of like, you know, not just like physical, but like there's digital media now too. Speaking of like, you know, our projects are all digital based. And it's just like, not just that, but it's like the content we consume now is mostly digital, right? Like when we have time, obviously. And so like, that's another, like, how do you manage your library, right? That's another deep dive we could do. I mean, there's so many topics we could talk about.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And that actually like helps with decluttering your mind, because whatever it is that you're constantly consuming, that's what you're going to be thinking. And I know in 2020, when I was, you know, everybody was messed up in 2020. And at some point,
I
cleaned out a lot of stuff. I went through my Spotify and I like unfollowed a bunch of different artists, deleted music that I was like, I don't align to this anymore. Why am I listening to like, you know, like I grew up listening to rap and hip hop. And there was like a lot of violent stuff that was said, or like just negative shit about women and this and that. And I'm like, right, I don't support that. Like I'm looking, like I understand the lyrics. I hear the lyrics and sometimes I'll be attracted to
the beats. I
think
when we're younger, we don't really. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then it's like, you don't really need that.
Like, yeah. We don't really connect with what the lyrics are saying until later. And we're just like, oh, I didn't know that was actually said. And then you realize, well, yeah, maybe like you said, you either like you don't support it anymore or it doesn't speak to you, you know, in the same way. I mean, it might be a sick beat, but it might not be the story that you're wanting to tell or support, like you said. So it could be damaging if you want to like continue supporting certain artists, you know, in certain ways. I think that's the best way to say it.
Oh, yeah.
Without going down a rabbit hole of like, you know, who and what.
I know. But there's that psychology, because it's eventually like a lot of that information, especially when you're listening to it over and over, it is like subliminal messaging that's constantly in your head. And if that's all you're ever listening to, if you're constantly listening to negative things and negative messaging, like your brain is going to pick up on that and that's eventually going to spread. So that's why, you know, when you're like sad, yeah, sometimes it's okay to like dive into the sad music, but like you gotta balance that. Otherwise, like, yeah, you're gonna stay sad. You're gonna stay depressed. You're gonna stay angry if that's all the music you ever listen to. It's just, I learned that the hard way, but I was like, oh, this is a great science experiment.
Me too. No, Denise, like, that's why now I have to listen to the K-pop.
Oh, K-pop.
Because it's all upbeat, usually. I mean, they have lots of sad love songs too, like ballads.
There's always
like,
sad okay, love songs.
I know, I'm like, I'm skipping that shit. I'm not interested in that. Yeah. I need to like stay upbeat. Otherwise, I'm going to be too depressed. That's why I'm like, I need to learn how to DJ so I can get to like EDM and like, you know, house music and other shit like that. I think that'd be really fun.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah.
As we're kind of like wrapping things up here, I wanted to ask, like, was there anything that you would want to share with our listeners? Any last minute tips or comments or words of wisdom?
Yeah, of course. There's so many, right? There's so many lessons, you know, that you can learn and grow from. But I think like one piece of advice, like I usually gravitate towards is like, there's always like people out there, you know, like we were saying, who are going to gravitate towards you as long as you stay true to yourself and you execute based out of, you know, it's all from your heart, right? Like when you're creating. And so it's like, it's about choosing love, I think. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a really good message to kind of end on, is that like, no matter what you're doing, it's, you have to focus on what you're putting out there, right? And so I've been relearning this lesson too in the last year or so. And so it's like, yeah, just, you know, if you do get down or negative, it's okay. But it's like, you know, trying not to dwell on it is important. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just, you know, listen to some good music and dance around your apartment. You know, sometimes that's what you need.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And I really appreciate that. It's true. It's like, we forget that creation is sometimes like out of love and just doing mm-hmm. art just for the sake of it. Just get it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. Yeah. I love talking to you today, and thanks for inviting me.
Oh, yeah, no, of course. And I'd love to like continue talking, but like I got like another thing happening after this. But you know what I just realized too? I think today is like the Chinese New Year. It's like the year of the dragon.
Oh, it is. Cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's exciting.
Happy Chinese New Year.
Happy Lunar New Year.
Yeah. And like, What's interesting is that I was born in the year of the dragon. Yeah. So it's like, it's supposed to be lucky for you if it's your year, but it's just like, well, nothing's happened yet. Well, maybe I'm like something happened this year.
yet. Remember, we still got a year because I was also year of the dragon. So we're about to fuck shit up this year. I don't know how, but it's going to happen.
I love that. Well, first we got to finish our music documentary, and then I'm going to loop you guys into my other projects because the other projects are going to be lengthier, and I'm going to be submitting to contests so I can try to win some funds to like do some cool stuff.
Yeah, that would be dope.
Like I'm not working on the historical fiction one with the like the Transcontinental Railroad one. I have one that I tried to shoot with Jessica while I was still in Austin called The Barn. And I'm going to be fleshing that out to submit at the end of the month for Jordan Peele's company's it's like a new, it's their first annual like writing competition, but it's going to involve some video too, because you have to essentially pitch it to them. And they're only picking 6 winners. And like, so hopefully I win and then we have $50,000 to make it. But if not, then I'll find some other avenues, but to kind of do that. But that's happening. This month is one of the shorter projects I'm working on. They're only accepting up to 15 pages.
Ooh.
And I have like part of the screenplay written already. So I just need to go back in and finish it up. But that's in the works too. And then I've got some other stuff that I'm wanting to work on, but haven't gotten there yet. Yeah. So yeah, but I'm hoping that that's kind of the lucky area that I'll be experiencing later.
Sending the good dragon vibes over there to you, because that sounds thanks, awesome, dude. And yeah, that's really exciting, and I didn't know they had stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm gonna work on it tomorrow.
That's really dope.
There are, oh my gosh, if you want to talk about writing contests or competitions or getting your work out there, like what the pipeline looks like, talk to me about that offline. And we'll keep the conversation going.
Hell yeah. That sounds great.
About all these topics if you want to.
No, literally everything. I mean, we have to check in with Julia's creative process anyway. So yeah, well, we have a lot to like continue to keep tabs on. And then obviously like our documentary. So yeah, we're going to be talking for sure.
Definitely. Yeah. Text me anytime.
Yeah, of course. And likewise.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Rogue. I really appreciate your time today. This has been an awesome conversation. And I know like we'll end up, who knows, maybe recording another session at another time as we like further expand on different things. Yeah, it'll be like a cool follow-up.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to share all the info sure. in the bio. So for any listeners who are interested in checking out some of the references, Rogue did leave some recommendations on quite a number of things like the videos and books and things like that. So we'll have it in there. And then, yeah, we'll follow up. But until the next time, thank you again, Rogue. And thank you so much to all of our listeners and viewers. I really appreciate your time. And until the next one.
Yeah, sounds great. Thank you so much again, Denise. And yeah, hope to see you soon. And we'll definitely continue the conversation. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, we're definitely, it's going to happen. So we're going to continue it.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Awesome. All right. Thank you.